Parshas Vayeshanan, part 4. Okay, so we were discussing that the Aseres HaDibros end with commandments not to covet, not to want and try to pursue our wants with regard to things that aren't ours. There's very interesting Ibn Ezra on this commandment. Ibn Ezra says, how come is it that the Torah commands us about our inner wants? What can I do? I saw a beautiful woman, she's married to him, I want her. But how could the Torah command me not to? So the Ibn Ezra tells us that the way our inner self works is that if you have, he gives a mashal, he gives an example. The peasant doesn't go looking at the beauty of the princess and say, boy, I wish one day she'll be mine. That's not something that we usually find. In fairy tales, maybe, but that's not what we find. He says, things that people feel are beyond their reach, they don't go looking and wanting. If you wish, there's an Aesop's fable about the fox that was eyeing the apple. And he spent a few good minutes jumping and trying to pick the apple. And finally, when he saw he couldn't reach the apple, he said, ah, it's not good anyways. So there's an aspect, Ibn Ezra says, where what we want stems from what we feel we could have. We don't want things that we know are completely beyond our reach. No one, when he's old enough to understand that he's not going to be able to flap his wings, no one wants to fly. We know, I'm just not going to fly. So there are certain things that we recognize are not going to enter our power. As much as I would want, I'm not going to have that. And therefore, we don't want them. So when we look at something, at someone else's wife, at someone's home, at someone's material wealth, and we want it, that wanting stems from the fact that we don't view it, the Torah, as the way we must live. We say, oh, the Torah says it's forbidden, but let me figure out if there's a way I could have it. So the Ibn Ezra says, when the Torah tells us not to want, not to covet these things, the Torah is telling us how we're supposed to build our inner world. That if in our minds, when the Torah says it's forbidden, that means no, I'm not going to have it. It's just not within my reach. It's no different than my waking up in the morning and saying, gee, I wish it were night now. What do you mean? You're not going to get that sun to put its light out. You know that. The sun is, the light's going to be there. So if we view the Torah's commandments that way, then we won't want things that way. And the truth is that this concept that Ibn Ezra tells us is I think its source is in a Gemara in Sota. The Gemara says that when a woman is suspected of doing illicit actions, doing things that she shouldn't do, and her husband warns her, and then again she is seen in a mysterious setting where we don't know what really happened, so we bring her up to the high court, we bring her up to the Beis HaMikdash, and God says, I want there to reign peace in this house, so I'm going to verify what really happened, and I'm going to take away any suspicions. We're going to give her to drink some special water that God says his name is to be erased in that water, and then if she's innocent, she'll be blessed, and if she's guilty, she'll be cursed. The Torah tells us that part of this procession is that people see her be disgraced. We make her take off her ornaments, parts of her clothing are ripped. So the Gemara asks, how could we do that? We have the young Kohanim that are there. If they see her in a fashion where her hair is uncovered, and from there we learn out that Jewish women have to keep their hair covered. So the Gemara asks, how could the Torah tell us to put the Kohanim in a situation where they'll see a woman when she's immodest? Maybe she'll come out righteous. And then the young Kohanim will spend their life coveting her. So we see from that Gemara, the Gemara wasn't concerned that they'll covet her if she's dead. Why not if she's dead?
Dead.
It seems from the Gemara says that we have a tradition and understanding that the Yetzer Hora only covets things that he sees. If he visualizes something, then he wants it. But if he doesn't, then he doesn't want it. So from that Gemara it seems that the Gemara was only concerned if she lives. What happens if she dies? Why wasn't the Gemara concerned? What happens if she explodes? But they saw her in an immodest fashion, then they'll spend the rest of their life coveting her. No, they won't covet her because they know she's in the grave. We have another Gemara. The Gemara says that one of the Amorim met Eliyo. I don't remember exactly who it was that went into Hebron. He went to the Maris HaMachpelah and he saw Avram resting his head on Sarah's lap. He saw a vision. He saw Avram, our patriarch Abraham, and his head was resting on Sarah's lap. And she was going through his hair. And when they saw him, they became uncomfortable. How come he's coming in? There's something private going on between Avram and Sarah. So obviously that Gemara needs understanding as to what two dead people are doing expressing love to one another, Avram and Sarah. I mean, they're supposed to be beyond that. When a person dies, all physical things cease. But the Gemara over there also discusses that they weren't worried that the one who saw them is going to have his Yetzer Hara attack him. Why? Because he knows he's not going to have Sarah. Even though Sarah, we know, is one of the most beautiful women that was ever created. The Gemara tells us there were a few beautiful, exceptionally beautiful women. One of them was Sarah. But nonetheless, they weren't concerned about. Because the man knew he's never going to have Sarah. She's dead. She's dead a few thousand years. So I think that what Ibn Ezra said, really the source for what he said is in these Gemaras. And when the Torah tells us we're not supposed to covet, the Torah is telling us how powerfully we're supposed to build our connection to the Torah. That when the Torah commands us and tells us a married woman is not going to be yours, then we have to have that as something that's deeply ingrained in our hearts. The Pasuk tells us in Eov testifies himself, he says, Biris karasi leinoi, I cut a treaty with my eyes, Valis bonon, I don't look even at a psula, an unmarried girl. So the Gemara says, well, he could have married her. Why wouldn't he look? So the Gemara says, because maybe he'll find her to be beautiful. And then he'll want to marry her. And maybe she'll say no. And then she'll marry someone else. So Eov said, I was concerned that I'll be in a situation where I'll want to marry a girl, and I won't be able to marry her, and I'll walk around the rest of my life with the problems of my heart running after that girl. And that's supposed to give us a certain amount of insight as to where we're supposed to be headed with our eyes. It's true. The Gemara says that before a person marries a girl, he's supposed to see her. But that doesn't mean he's supposed to spend his time looking at her throughout the dates. There's seeing a person when we talk to them, it's normal seeing. Then there's looking at a person to make sure, is this person going to find favor in my eyes when I marry him? That kind of looking, a person is supposed to once, at some point where it's safe to do it. But that's it. And we learn that out from Eov. And all this goes back to Losach Modeshes Reyecha. That we're supposed to be careful not to covet our friend's wife. So part of it is building our inner belief and our inner connection to the Torah. And part of it is also protecting our eyes, what we look at and what we see. After the recording of the Ten Commandments, so Moshe Rabbeinu records how when the Jewish people heard the Aseres HaDibros, they came to him, and they said, Hashem showed us His greatness and His honor. We heard His voice from within a fire. Today we've seen that God could speak to man and man will live. So it seems like they had a problem believing that Moshe Rabbeinu was getting Nevuah. The Jewish people believed Moshe. But on the other hand, they had a certain ideological problem with the idea that God connects to man and He remains living. It seems like the people in the world. The world belief at that time was that if a person does merit to get prophecy, he's going to die from it. He can't remain living. And one of the things that the Aser Sadibros showed the Jewish people is that it's feasible to hear God and remain living. And we find that there were different levels in the belief of the Jewish people. When Moshe Rabbeinu first comes to the people, it says, Vayamein ha'am. They believe that Hashem is going to redeem. We have the Aser Sadibros, they have another layer of belief. We come to the Yam Suf, it says, Vayaminu b'Hashem uv Moshe Abdo. Another level of belief. And Hashem tells Moshe that they'll have the Aser Sadibros, they'll reach another level of belief. All the time we have different levels of belief. The Jewish people are, again and again, the Torah tells us, now they believe. So each time we have to define what level was being built. So some explain that over here that's what was being built. That the concept of Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah. Hashem tells Moshe, V'gam b'cho yaminu le'olam. They'll believe in you forever. The Rambam says that's a mitzvah. We're going to believe in Moshe forever. The Torah is testifying that Nevuah Moshe is going to be ever existent. Chazal tells that when the Jewish people heard the Aser Sadibros, different things happened. There are different midrashim as to what happened. One midrash says they dropped dead. And Hashem brought them back to life. And they continued listening. They dropped dead again. And each time they were thrown back. Just the awesome force threw them back. So until finally they came to Moshe and they said, we can't handle this. Chazal tells that after they heard two dibros, they heard Hashem says, Anochi Hashem Elokech, I am Hashem your God. Lo yelecho Elokim acherim al panai. You're not allowed to have any other gods on my face. That's it. They couldn't handle anymore. They said, the other eight, Moshe Rabbeinu, you tell us. That's why we say, Torah tzivalonu Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu commanded us with Torah. Torah is Gematria 611. Because two we didn't hear from Moshe. We heard directly from God. That's why Torah tzivalonu Moshe. Moshe commanded us 611. The other two we heard directly from God. And that's why also some explain why the first two Dibros Hashem speaks in first person. Anochi Hashem Elokecho. Lo yelecho Elokim acherim al ponai. Upon my face. Then later on says, Lo sisa Hashem Hashem Lokecha. You should not say Hashem's name in vain. Why doesn't Hashem say Lo sisa as Shmi? Shouldn't say my name, just like Hashem said, Onochi, I am Hashem your God. So over there we see the allusion to what Chazal taught us, that after the second Dibra, after the first two commandments, it wasn't God talking to us directly, it was all through Moshe. Could be. Yeah. That's a concept I haven't fully worked out myself. I can't help you with what the name of Hashem is. Yeah, it definitely seems that way. We constantly speak about Hashem's name. Rav Avram Shapiro has an introduction to maybe Minchas Avram, I don't remember the name of his sefer. He has in his introduction there a whole long essay as to what the term Shem Hashem means. What does it mean? Shem Hashem. The name of Hashem. What do we mean when we say that? We begin Mincha. We say, Ki Shem Hashem Ekra. We say, Baruch Shem Kvod Nachusa. That's Shem Kvod Nachusa. It's not Shem Hashem. Shem Hashem is a concept that we need to define. So the Jewish people come to Moshe and they say, today we see that God could speak to man and man will live. But if we continue hearing God, we're going to die. We can't handle this. You listen and you tell us what God told you. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't like that. Moshe Rabbeinu felt, if you have an opportunity to hear it from God, you have an opportunity to hear it from me, why would you want to hear it from me? Listen, hear it from God directly. He felt the Jewish people were wrong in that request. And God told Moshe, he said, Halvai that they should always fear me like they fear me now. Again, we see an allusion to the fact that God already knew the Jewish people were not going to be fearful of God in the time to come. God tells Moshe, go tell the Jewish people to return to their tents and you stay with me. Chazal tell us that here in Sefer Dvar, Moshe reveals to us that God told him they should go back to their tents. Go back to their tents is a clean way of saying they should go back to their wives. Continue married life. We know that the Jewish people, 3 days before the giving of the Ten Commandments. They each left their wives for 3 days to maintain a level of purity to receive the Ten Commandments. But Moshe Rabbeinu, you, God said, you stay with me. You don't go back to your wife. And here, the Torah reveals to us that that which Moshe did, that he didn't go back to live with his wife, Aaron and Miriam, they didn't understand. How can Moshe do that? We discussed a few weeks ago that they were speaking about Moshe. They said, Lashon Hara, how could Moshe Rabbeinu leave his wife? We also heard prophecy, we didn't leave our spouses. But here Moshe Rabbeinu reveals to us that really it was godly ordained. God told them, you remain with me. They go back to their tents, they go back home, you don't go back home. You're always going to get nevuah from me. You're on a level where you always have to be on this level of purity. It's interesting when the Torah tells us to go back to our wives, so it says, go back to your tents. Lashon HaKodesh is called Lashon HaKodesh, the tongue that's holy. Why is it called Lashon HaKodesh? So the Rambam says it's called Lashon HaKodesh because it's holy. We never refer to things that are less than holy, that are impure, directly. We say the bris milah. What's the bris milah? The covenant of the cutting off of the foreskin. We're talking about the whole aver. But we don't speak about it directly. The Torah says his offspring, so it doesn't say those which he had from his semen, his sperm, etc. So it doesn't say that. It says those that emanated from his thigh. We don't speak about the aver directly. When we speak about it, we call it the aver, the limb. We don't have a term that speaks directly about it. When we speak about a husband and wife being together, we say tashmish hamita, use of a bed. We don't have a term that describes it directly. And there are many examples that the Rambam gives. So here too, the Jewish people are commanded, go back to your tents. The Ramban disagrees. Says, we have the term shegal. Shegal, mishgal. According to one understanding in the Gemara, it seems like it means having marital relations. So he says, we do have terms for it. And the Ramban says the reason Lashon HaKodesh is called Lashon HaKodesh is because it's the holy tongue that God speaks in. God gave us the Torah, he spoke to the prophets in that tongue. It wasn't God spoke in that language. God spoke in that language that shows us it's the holy language. The Jewish people are commanded, Shuvu lachem le'ohalechem, return to your tents. Chazal say, here we were commanded to procreate, to have children. And here, the Jewish people are given a commandment specifically to the Jewish people to have children. So why do we need it? The Torah begins with, Pru Urvu. So Chazal tell us that Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, they were given to all of mankind. All of mankind was given a commandment to have children, not to steal, set up a justice system. But the Jewish people were chosen separately. And here we have a reinstating of one of the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. The non-Jews, they lost the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. God saw, Ro'ah Vayater Goyim, the prophet says, God saw what was going on in the world and he freed the nation. So Chazal said, doesn't mean he freed them. He said, you're no longer going to get any reward for the seven commandments of Noah. Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, even if you fulfill them, you're not getting a reward. You better fulfill them, but you're not going to get a reward anymore because the whole world trampled on the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. The Jewish people had a reinstating of the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. We're told not to steal. We're told to have children, etc.
The Gemara quotes the pasuk in Daniel that Shegal Yosef Esetzlo and tries to define what the word Shegal means.
That is a female dog. No?
So that's why I said, according to one understanding in the Gemara, correct. I was referring to that Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. That the Gemara, even that, I'm not sure that the other understandings disagree that the word Shegal means having marital relations. It could be, like the Gemara says, that they loved their dog so much. Or, according to one understanding, that's what he used the dog for. So, that's why I was referring to that Gemara. Right, that's what I meant. The Torah again commands.
So the seven laws are now the same thing? They have to do it, but they don't get the bonus?
That's what it seems, yeah.
That's what it seems.
If you tell you have to do it, you are getting more
So that's something we have to discuss. In that Gemara, I think it's in Avodah Zarah. That Gemara, we have to discuss that, how that works. Right. Well, I think it's in Avodah Zarah in the beginning. You could look where the pasuk Ra'av Vayater Goyim should be around Daf Gimel or Dalit, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe even days on the days. I don't remember. Again, we have the commandment to learn Torah, and this commandment appears again and again, because in order for a person to be a whole person, he has to learn, and that's something we constantly need. We need strengthening in, and that's current events. If there's one message we have to take away from what's going on today, it's that we need more Torah. We've reached this point because we're distant from the Torah, and we all have to strengthen ourselves. If we, the people who keep the Torah, would be behaving the way we should, then the people all around us would be saying, you know, I wish I were learning Torah and keeping Torah. It would draw people to us. If we see people around us being distant from us, a whole party is established called Shinui, and unfortunately we see how many votes they get, then that shows we're doing something wrong. People aren't being attracted to us, they're being distanced from us. So we have to take that to heart. Seems that way from their advertisement. Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Jewish people, says, God didn't cut this treaty with our fathers, he cut this pact with us, everyone that's here alive. So we discussed last week already that this is a new generation. 40 years have passed. All those that were between the age of 20 and 40 have passed away, and we have people 40 years old who weren't around at the time of Matan Torah. Our 40-year-old people, they didn't see the giving of the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, God didn't cut this treaty with our fathers, he cut it with us. Well, what do you mean? The whole point is that that generation passed away, and this is a new generation. So Moshe Rabbeinu taught the Jewish people that this treaty is with the nation. This treaty wasn't with these people. These people were representative of the nation. And not only those that were alive then were part of this treaty. We discussed in Rosh Hashanah, about a year ago, we discussed in the Igeres HaRambam how the Gerim are included in the treaty with God. How the Gerim are part of this. But this is the source. And Moshe Rabbeinu is telling a generation that really, a large part of the people that are standing about to enter the land of Israel, they weren't there when the Ten Commandments were given. And he's telling them, God didn't cut this treaty with your fathers, he cut this treaty with us. So this is relevant today as well. It's not that they accepted it. We accepted it also. And there's a concept in the Gemara, Kohal lo meis, congregation doesn't pass away. It has halachic relevance and different applications, but it's also an ideological concept that the congregation doesn't pass away. You could have individuals that pass away, but the force, the unifying force of the Jewish people also is a force that doesn't pass away. It's being that it's never been broken. The Jewish people have always had a continuum, so the congregation never passed away. And that's also part of the concept here, I think, that there's a continuation of this treaty, because there's a constant continuation from Sinai till today.
Like reincarnation?
No, I don't mean reincarnation. I just mean if a person, we have generation X that was there given the Torah, 75% passed away and we have 75% new, but the other 25% were still there, so we have an overlap. So that overlap causes it that this whole congregation is part of the people that received the Torah. Now let's say the next 50% pass away. So now we don't have any of the original 25%, but we still have 50% of those that were with those 25% that were the original 25%. Those 50% cause the other 50% that joined them to be direct connection going back to Sinai. That's the same congregation. The congregation didn't pass away. Individuals passed away and are replaced, and the congregation continues. It's the same Am Yisrael. the pact wasn't with these individuals. The pact that God made was with the Jewish people as a whole. The Jewish people as a whole haven't changed. So now I'm one of those members of the Jewish people as a whole. So I'm one of those that God made the pact with. If you look at it as a pact with individuals, so he passed away. There's nothing to do about it. But if you look at it as a pact with a people, God made a pact with the Jewish people, well, then the Jewish people are still alive and well. We still have that pact with God. God tells us, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am Hashem, your God, in the singular sense. And one of the things we're supposed to learn from that is that every person has to build his inner belief. A person can't live on the fact that, well, my parents told me, or, you know, they say it so, so it must be so. There's an aspect where every person has to reach a certain inner wholeness in his belief, and that's signified by the fact that it says, Hashem Elokecha, yours in a singular sense. You have to build your belief system. It's not enough that you look back and say, well, it's okay. That's one understanding.
That the second generation, even during Moshe, was testing Moshe. The second generation had to build their belief also. If they don't have to rely on their personal fathers,
so that's different. There's
still Moshe.
So let's go one step at a time. Mm-hmm. If a person works out what we've discussed, that there's a logical reason to maintain one's belief because of the fact that 600,000 people say something happened, it's not the same as one person saying it happened, so then I don't have to test beyond that. If a person is whole with that, then he's reached that conclusion. We're not saying that a person has to work 10 years to reach the conclusion. We're just saying a person has to work it out within himself. A person could learn the Rambam, Hilchos Yesodei Torah, and say, that's fine for me. Okay. Another thing is that that generation specifically that you're talking about, the second generation in the desert, they were witnessing miracles every day. They were getting manna every day. They had a pillar of fire, a pillar of clouds. They had a miraculous well. For them to be testing, what?
They could have thought that because they didn't know better, they could have thought it's all natural that it comes from the sky. It always has been like this.
I don't know, they were traveling, they were seeing other countries, they were seeing that when they leave a place it doesn't keep falling over there. Somehow wherever the Jewish people are, bread is falling from the sky, and where they aren't, the bread isn't falling. So you can't say it's natural. What's natural about it?
Yeah, no, I mean part of the idea that they left Egypt, they just have to believe it because they were not there themselves. So they have to rely on their parents or
society. That's what we discussed once. Something that all of society accepts. No one here questions whether there was a man named Ben-Gurion. Why not? You never saw him. So what are you saying? I believe my parents and they believe... Well, maybe your parents never saw Ben-Gurion. So no. There are things that when society accepts them, we accept.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean historical facts.
Yeah, okay, so then what did Ben-Gurion say? That's all of opinions.
Okay, right. Right. That's why we didn't go into specifics. We went into just the idea that there was Mamar Har Sinai, that 600,000 people had a revelation from God.
Yeah.
We weren't discussing what color shoes Moshe Rabbein wore. That, you could tell me whatever you want. Either I'll believe you or I won't. And it's true, there are elements of specifics where, who knows? What?
Elements that you have to make their own. Like, we really believe that it happened this and that way.
How do you mean? I'm not with you.
They're believing on testifying, but at one hand to say that people shouldn't just believe on the things that only because their parents say it. If you have to make it your own, you try to retest if it's really true.
Well, when I said not relying on one's parents, I didn't mean that one shouldn't rely on one's parents as a blanket statement. I meant if one works out logically why one should rely on either the fact that a whole people is saying it's happened, or most of the world is saying it's happened, that's fine. But he has to work it out logically. A person can't just say, well, he said so, so it must be so. That's what I meant. Like,
I didn't mean to say if a person works out logically, well, if my father's telling me on the night of Yetzias Mitzrayim that this is what happened, and all across the world, Yemenite Jews that never saw us, they're telling their children, and Jews that we never heard of in Spain and in all over the world, this tradition is continuing, then you know what? It's pretty far-fetched to say it stems from nothing. So that's different than saying, well, he said so, so it must be so. That's working it out logically why I should believe him. That's what I was referring to. Moshe Rabbeinu again tells the Jewish people to keep learning, to keep the Torah, not to stir from the Torah, not to go to the right, not to go to the left, to go in the way God commanded us. Again, the same concept we discussed before, leman tichyun v'tov lachem, so that you should live in the world, v'tov lachem, it'll be good for you in this world, v'arachtem yomim, you'll have a long life in the world to come. So again, the Torah is the best way for us to live in this world, not only in the world to come. The parasha then goes on, ki yishalcha vincha leimor, when your son asks you. And I'm sorry, no, I skipped. We have the parasha of Shema Yisrael. The parasha of Shema Yisrael goes, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Listen, hear, accept, obey Israel. Hashem is our God. He's all powerful. He controls the world. Hashem is one. There's no other. Ve'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha. You should love Hashem, your God. How do we love Hashem? So we look around. We see the amazing world that God created. We see the amazing forces of nature. When we're awestruck with the creations of God, that brings us to want to be closer to Him, to love Him. Bechol levavcha, with all of your heart, uvechol nafshecha, in all of your soul. Even if one soul is going to be taken, one has to love his God. And when we say this, we should focus that even if we have to give up our lives for God, we're willing to do it. That's one of the intents one is supposed to have when he says Kriya Shema. Uvechol ma'odecha, with all of your money. Well, you just said with my heart and my soul, what are you adding with the money? Because some people love their money more than their own lives. And this brings us to a point which I'm scared of saying because I'm scared of being misunderstood. So I'm going to try to give a preface, and I hope I won't be misunderstood. When we look at things that happen in society, so there are different levels at which we could look at what's happening. There's the social level, which is important. There's a higher level. There's the level of, is the Jewish people, the society that's supposed to be expressing God's will in this world, guiding the world to living a moral life and a correct life, are they moving up or down? Are they doing positive things or negative things? When the Jewish people were faced with a problem in the time of the judges, the time of the Shoftim,